I want to say at the very beginning that abortion is an intrinsically difficult moral issue for particular reasons. There are lots of intrinsically difficult moral issues, and the diagram can help show why this is the case with particular force here. For example, one of the factors you will recall in any decision on any moral issue, including abortion, is a factor of the circumstances, the analysis of the situation, the facts at hand, the empirical judgments that you have to make. But in the case of abortion, you are talking about, with one word, a very wide variety of highly varied circumstances. And yet you are trying to come to a moral decision about abortion as such. For example, you're talking about the situation of a 40-year-old woman who has one child, has had one child die at age 3, now goes to the doctor, has amniocentesis, finds out that the fetus is badly deformed, and chooses to have an abortion of this badly deformed fetus. In this particular case, abortion was carried out, and not long after that, woman became pregnant again and had normal birth of a normal child. You are talking about a very different set of circumstances, and still calling it abortion, when you are talking about an early teen pregnancy, a case of incest with a grandfather, and a decision to terminate the pregnancy. You are talking about a very different situation when you're talking about high school parties, no precautions taken, a good time was had by all, and a pregnancy. You're talking about a very different situation when all precautions were taken by people who did not want to have a child, but the woman became pregnant. Anyway, that's quite different from a case where the fetus has been diagnosed as carrying Tay-Sachs disease, where the pregnancy was desired, the child is desired. Tay-Sachs disease entails a terrible suffering of the child, and the child will surely die within probably the first 2, maybe 3 years, and to date we don't know how to even keep that child who will surely die from suffering a terrible degeneration that ends in death. And so some people have decided, when they have found out that the fetus has carrying, the mother is a Tay-Sachs carrier, have decided for abortion. That's a very different situation from a friend of ours whose important career and became pregnant, did not want the child, and essentially for career reasons, her own work reasons, decided for an abortion. That is very different in terms of the empirical circumstances from the situation with a young couple in suburban Washington, D.C. He in the Navy, she became pregnant. They discovered a particular condition in the development of the fetus, which meant that that fetus could develop, and a normal birth could take place, but the fetus developed without a brain. And the baby would in fact, in all likelihood, be stillborn or would die very, very shortly thereafter because of the stunted nervous system. They brought that case to the commanding officer and appealed for the Navy to cover the costs of abortion. The Navy could not do so because there is a restriction on government funds to fund abortion that pertains to the military. And so they, in fact, took it to some hearings in Congress because they did not have the money to terminate it. And his employer, the United States Navy, could not spend medical insurance funds in that way because of restrictions. But they desired an abortion. Now, all I'm saying is that all of these are widely and wildly different circumstances. They all entail the same thing, namely abortion or the consideration of it. Anytime you have a moral issue that you have to decide on, named by one thing, such as abortion, but it entails widely and wildly different situations, circumstances, empirical realities, you have an intrinsically difficult moral issue. It is compounded in this case immensely by other factors on the diagram. Just start with that diversity of empirical realities, circumstances, and then add to it moral norms and fundamental beliefs. In this case, you are intersecting one of the most basic moral norms, namely a general prohibition against the taking of human life. Now, there's a great debate on whether this is, in fact, the killing of human life. That's part of the abortion debate. But by virtue of being part of that abortion debate, you have come up against one of the most fundamental of human moral norms in any society, in any place. Or you've come up against some fundamental beliefs, basic convictions over here. That's another element in this diagram. It's different from moral norms, although it may be where moral norms themselves root or reside. There are some fundamental moral beliefs about what a human being is. That's a highly debatable question. And what constitutes personhood? When is a zygote or a fetus a human being? As soon as you start probing that, you soon move far beyond what science can tell you, and you're into a question that transcends that but includes the scientific rendering. You're into some people's fundamental convictions and beliefs. Or what does God intend for human life? I mean, in no time at all in the abortion debate, you are up against not only fundamental moral norms, but you are intersecting people's most basic beliefs and convictions. So if you just add these factors together, varied circumstances, and yet the same thing pertaining to all, namely termination of fetal life, basic moral beliefs, some of the most basic known to the human race, and some of the most fundamental beliefs involved. When you've got those factors, you've got a morally morally difficult case. If that weren't enough, the abortion issue is connected to many other morally volatile issues. I've sat in on many abortion debates where the question wasn't even the question, the moral question of the termination of fetal life. It was the question of, should morality be legislated? Or should religious convictions have a place in public policy formulation? The question wasn't the termination of fetal life, it was the role of government and our private choices. It wasn't the termination of fetal life, the question was, what is the relationship of male and female, the ethics of sexuality, and who should decide when a woman is pregnant with an unwanted pregnancy? You hear what I'm saying? You can name 10 other volatile issues that are volatile on their own terms, quite apart from their being part of the abortion debate. When, however, they are part of the abortion debate, then they become a part of the moral problematic of it all. That's why on the issue of abortion, so many people are so surprised at so many other people when they come up. I remember readers of Sojourner magazine being surprised at Sojourners when Sojourners came out very strongly anti-abortion. Sojourner people said, we're just being consistent. We're, after all, we are pacifists. We are just, and we care deeply about all of God's creation, and it is just out of character with the rest of our convictions if we are liberal on the question of the killing of this innocent life. Daniel Berrigan has uttered himself in the same terms. So a lot of people who associate, and I remember colleagues of mine who sat down and wrote letters to Sojourners because they agreed with Sojourners on so many other issues and thought that Sojourners wasn't consistent, where the Sojourner community felt that they were being consistent. So it depends on so many different issues. I personally find myself, if you want to just, we have to talk about it at much length, but if you just wanted a quick overview of a position, I personally find myself feeling that some abortions, and I would want to sort those that I mentioned at the outset, some among them are morally permissible. Nearly all abortions are morally tragic. The law is necessary in questions of abortion, but the law is incapable as law and as a vehicle of public policy of very tight control. And if you try to legislate in great detail on issues of abortion, you probably will entail more that is morally undesirable than if you have relatively liberal laws, maybe something along the lines of the present U.S. law that came out of the court decision on Roe versus Wade. I find myself saying the Christian community's task on questions of abortion is quite different from the public at large. Has a different role to play than we have as citizens. But every single one of these elements entails a lengthy process of deliberation, because the issue is itself intrinsically so complex. And not just complex, problematic or difficult. Okay, do you want to discuss this for a bit? Why abortion is a complex and intrinsically difficult and volatile issue? I just think it's helpful to see why that is the case. Maybe that sounds like just a common sense observation. But when you hear people in the debate about abortion, you do not hear a recognition of the complexity about it. You hear people taking one or two or three of those factors that make it problematic and then being consistent oftentimes with those without taking account of the others. So they will argue from a moral norm, the general prohibition against the taking of innocent life, and proceed as if that were the only factor. Or they will take another, the right of a woman to make decisions about the use of her own body, and press that consistently without taking effect of account of the other. Or, as I often find to be the case, many people, when they argue about abortion, are only imagining, are only conceiving or assuming certain empirical circumstances. They're assuming that those are cases where pregnancy was a matter of consent, for example. That's what they have in mind. Or they're assuming that all abortions are convenience abortions, as in the case of our friend for whom it would have been inconvenient. That's a serious word in this case, inconvenient because of career considerations. They're assuming that all pregnancies fall into that line, whereas someone else arguing is assuming a kind of worst-case pregnancy, a case of rape or incest, or is assuming a case of fetal deformity, and then argues the whole abortion issue and legislation on abortion in terms of assumed kinds of circumstances which do not pertain. So there are just lots of reasons why I think it's important to say at the outset something about the complexity and about the intrinsic difficulty, because much of the abortion debate does not reflect it, even though when you stop and think about it, it ought to be part of a kind of common sense observation.
Can I just add one more dilemma to your example? It's very different from
from your present difficulty, yes.
From a woman who has several children, the doctor has told her that you shouldn't, you know, if you don't get pregnant again, because you might not live through the pregnancy for the mother's self.
There are those cases.
Does she get pregnant and have her child knowing that she might die when she already has several children?
Yes.
I think she's just going to say, I know that's an argument, but for me, that's the one place where I have a little question. Not that question.
And there's one short of that that's a serious matter for many people, namely, for a number of reasons, choosing not to have any more children, have children. I mean, many abortions are by people who love the children they have, but do not want to have more children for a variety of reasons, even where it's not a danger to the mother's health. In a physical sense, they feel that the added strains would be undesirable, if not unhealthy.
And aren't there some who make some line, whether it's 3 months or some other thing, as to morality or permissibility? At a certain point, it's human life, and after.
That's another whole factor. I'm glad you mentioned that one, John, because in addition to my just saying that there are all sorts of different circumstances entailing the same thing, namely consideration of abortion, so also there's a convergence here of fundamental beliefs, what is a human being, what is a person, with some empirical judgments about when that person becomes a person. So if you had a chance to look at the Simmons book, he outlines three schools of thought, so to speak, on about personhood. There's one school of thought, and it's not always stated as such in the literature, it's often just assumed by people, is a school of thought that says our personhood is essentially defined by the genetic code. That is, we are a person from the moment of conception on. A person is a person's genetic code. What remains to happen is for all that potentiality to become reality. But everything is essentially cast from conception on. The rest is development. If you believe that a person is a person, or you've got, in fact, a human being from the point of conception on, then that matters. If it's a different judgment, which entails both some beliefs and some empirical judgment, along these lines, that you have a developmental view of a person, that is to say, it matters whether you're talking about the zygote, which is the fertilized egg, or whether you're talking about a viable fetus that could then live outside the mother's body. Some people have said you're talking about a human being when you're talking about viability. Before that, you're not. So there's a developmental school that talks about significant stages in fetal development, and morally it matters for these folks. At what stage? In the first trimester, it's a different matter than in the last trimester, morally. Still a third school of thinking about when is a, are we talking about the presence of a human being, is one which casts things mostly in terms of relationality and sociality. That is to say, you are talking about a human being when you are talking about someone who is capable of relationships with other human beings. It's essentially a kind of social definition or relational understanding of human beings. And until you have that capacity for response to other human beings, you're not talking about the presence of a human being. So for that school, a fertilized egg, whether implanted or not, yet implanted, is not, and the termination, say, in the first trimester of pregnancy is morally not as serious as at a later stage, again from viability on, when that capacity is there. So these factors also influence the decision.
I maybe a note of desperation I voice, but I need to get a sense of where we're going to go, because I really want to hear people's views here today on abortion. And
What I thought I would do, Spence, now is just remind people of what current U.S. law is. And some reasons for that. Won't take but a minute, just to know what the present circumstances are, and then go exactly to what you just asked, because I'm anxious to have us get to people's views too. Okay, the decisive case is Roe versus Wade. What was that, 73?
Yeah.
Yeah, January 73. And now there's a lot of legislation now, been in and out, defeated and reintroduced, to change the results of the Supreme Court decision. But to date, it hasn't been changed. We could talk about that if you want to. But let me just read, and for those of you who didn't read Simmons, a couple of paragraphs. Several things should be noted about this decision. One, the court did not rule that women have a constitutional right of abortion, but that they have a right to privacy, which includes decisions about a pregnancy. That may not sound like a significant difference to you, but it is, legally. So the basis of the decision is that women have a right to privacy, and that among the things one has a right to exercise decisions about privately is pregnancy. That's different from a constitutional right on abortion per se. Two, the court nowhere said a woman must have an abortion for any reasons, whether for rape, incest, fetal deformity, or any other cause. The decision is up to the woman and her physician. I should add that pertains to the first trimester. Pregnancy. Later on in the abortion question, other agents, so to speak, have a say. The state can regulate later on.
Say, up to the mother and the decision?
Yeah, in the first trimester.
Or is it just to the mother?
Well, the
final decision. You say the and the decision. The important.
I think it is a I think it is at a particular point. Just a minute, let me see if I can find it.
Well, wouldn't the court assume a legal abortion, therefore you have a recognized medical person, not a home remedy or something? It wouldn't, or, I mean, I don't know, but wouldn't that seem to be that when they say, and the physician, that you're assuming in this case that it's a medical procedure?
Yes. But Mike's question is asking whether the physician has any part of the decision, could say no.
Just no.
I think it's the woman has the right for the decision, but the physician is to be there so that this is medically safe. And so that is a consultation.
Yeah. I'm liking Mary's question of her life is in danger, and she can still go ahead with, and get pregnant and have a baby. Or would the doctor say, no, you can't, because it endangers your life. Very seriously endangers.
Oh, I don't, the former, not the latter. The doctor would not say, could not say by law, you can't make that finding. And the state cannot limit that choice of the woman during the first 12 weeks.
After the 12 weeks, then what?
After the 12 weeks, the court ruled the state may pass regulations for the purpose of protecting the health of the woman who chooses to terminate her pregnancy. In other words, it's just saying, when can the state say anything at all? It says in the second trimester, the state can rule on health considerations.
But not other considerations?
But in the last 3 months of pregnancy, the state can limit abortions to only those cases where the state, where the life or health of the mother is in danger. The state can regulate. I say can there. That means it can vary from state to state. And the state can go so far as to say no abortions are permitted in the final trimester except in cases where the life and health of the mother is in danger.
And there's a way that that's substantiated by medical opinion?
I'm sure that's a medical judgment. I don't know exactly what the terms for carrying on it are. Okay, so then the court ruled that the basic constitutional matter involved is a woman's right to privacy. Now, the court nowhere said that a woman must have an abortion for any reasons. The court refused to establish a single solution to complex decisions during the early stages of pregnancy. I'm not sure what that means other than that they didn't designate a single way of deciding. And the court recognized the viable fetus as having a constitutional status of person. A fetus that is capable of life apart from the mother is covered by law as a person. Now, the present legislation that's introduced from many quarters is to make the status of person pertain at every stage of pregnancy. That is, from conception on, one is a person, in a legal sense, and covered by the 14th Amendment of all human rights. Okay, and fifthly, the question of abortion is made primarily a moral issue and not a political or legislative issue, is what the court said. Thus, religious groups are left completely free to teach their parishioners whatever they wish regarding the morality of abortion and the personhood of the fetus. The court said, we're not going to decide on that except from the point of viability on. That's the only point at which we're going to make a decision about the personhood. However, the court refused to impose one viewpoint upon everyone, saying in the words of Justice Blackmun, quote, and Justice Blackmun wrote the majority opinion on this, we need not resolve the difficult question of when life begins, when those trained in the respective disciplines of medicine, philosophy, and theology are unable to arrive at any consensus. The judiciary at this point in the development of man's knowledge is not in a position to speculate. Now, that's left lots of people unsatisfied. Why are you ruling on abortion without making a decision on the basic question involved, namely whether this is human life and the termination of innocent human life or not? And in the Hauerwas article, or essays, there is some discussion of the shortcomings of the Supreme Court decision. Well, I just think it's important just to see what, in fact, is the law, whether you agree with it or not, because lots of the abortion debate has accused the Supreme Court of saying this or saying that, or not saying this and not saying that, without getting the facts straight. And has also said that thus we are free to or not free to do this or that. Okay, let's go then. Spence, do you have a way or an issue there that you want to use to get started?
I'll just say that that for myself, this is the issue that I speak least about because I'm the least comfortable with any of the issue I know. And that's why I really want to hear what other people have to say. It's I was more inclined towards a sojourner's type stance, a pro-life down the line, whether it's nuclear war or conception, whatever, until I just started talking with women who had been through just these incredibly horrible experiences, and where an abortion would have made it. I mean, were carrying the life to turn, you know, to the pregnancy to completion. Really just didn't seem to be an option. I mean, I know you can, you know, we can't make history turn out right, all that stuff, but still, my stumbling blocks became one-to-one contact with women, and I just can't even talk about it hardly anymore. So I really want to hear particularly what women have to say, but I everybody as well. And for me, again, it seems very different for me what happens in but the dialogue within the Christian community is, and what the dialogue within society is, I see those as very different for me. But.
Incidentally, just a footnote on that. That really is the crux of the issue that Hauerwas is trying to take up. So if you didn't have a chance to read Hauerwas' last few chapters on community of character, what he really wants to say is how ought Christians to go about thinking through the issue and what differences are there from how the wider society does it. So, when we talked about the topics that we wanted to take up in these last sessions, I remember, Marilyn, you saying that you welcomed a chance to hear out a response to your own general position. Would you state that so that could be one more as we move around the room?
Mine has a lot of ambivalence on the whole area of decisions because every case is so different. In a lot of cases, I almost wish there was another word than abortion because as your stories or your little scenarios that you started with, it can all, I mean, different circumstances can sound so different that to lump all of these kinds of choices in one bag seems to weight it even more heavily, that you're making these big, generic, sweeping statements about what you think other people ought to do with questions of life, death, conception, whatever you want to call it. But basically, I guess, in especially working with and talking with a lot of feminists, many of whom are consider themselves pacifists or moving in that direction. When abortion comes up, I've had this happen most often when it just happens to come up in conversation. I find there are very I don't know too many feminists who aren't pro-choice, and I'm not going to say. Who aren't pro-abortion, because I think pro-abortion is a more emotionally weighted word than pro-choice. But so I've had a lot of kind of flare-up instances talking about, well, what do we really value about life? What are we really saying about a different vision of reality? And a lot of times what I feel it comes to is that I guess basically, abortion is for me a life issue. And the where it most essentially is a life issue is whether or not we live in societies or communities that welcome children. Whether a woman is in a committed relationship or single, whether she has career things she wants to do or doesn't have those kinds of desires or gifts that she wants to exercise that would take a lifetime. Do we live in situations that really welcome and embrace new life, where it doesn't pit the life of a child against what the economic survival of a woman or... So for me, when I think that it was really helpful in Howard Wass's, he says that it essentially comes down to the question, and I think this is where the conversation should really begin, or the whole conversation be in the context of what kind of people are we that either can welcome children or for whom children are a problem. And it seems like that's usually the context in which abortion is discussed, is kind of the assumption that children are problems. And we don't have ways very well for women who are single or on their own for whatever reasons that they can have a child without it being a real trauma.
Yes, and of course he's talking about the Christian community there. Mm-hmm. And so
which
the community
is very judgmental
needs to be,
oftentimes.
But the community needs to be one where children aren't tied only to their biological parents. That is to say, in this community, singleness, to be single or to be married is a choice, but everyone can be involved in responsibility for other members. That is, parenting isn't tied simply to being biological mother or biological father. And for a lot of people, the abortion issue is in circumstances where the choice is made without a community that will take responsibility, will share responsibility for
you
new
don't
life.
Have that.
There
you
isn't.
Don't have
I found Howard Wass's way of putting the question helpful. And when I say helpful, I mean that as someone who has had to go over the same arguments from 1,000 sides. And I found it helpful in the sense of introducing a different perspective. Just the way he put the question, what would you tell your children about abortion in a way that would still make them glad to be children?
Okay. Before we jump into those questions, could we remember that there may be people here who have had abortions,
or
struggled with that question, or who have fathered a child and maybe there was a decision?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's real important to remember that in our whole
conversation.
And Bert, even before we get to that point, as a gay male, abortion is not necessarily the most personally connected of issues for me. But on the other hand, if I choose to be involved in the community of believers, which I do, it becomes one of the most important issues for me. And I can't help but see abortion as one issue, probably, I think, for me, the one that most thoroughly judges and damns the church. In the sense of the church has so much propagated this idolatry of the nuclear family, and then tells people who don't fit into that, tough luck, sister, you're on your own. And for me, it comes down to if I'm not willing to welcome a child into the world, no matter who biologically parents it, then I don't think I have any right to say anything about what those biological parents decide to do. And I don't see the church doing anything to say to a woman, we recognize you're in a terrible predicament. We want you to know that if that child is born, we commit ourselves, we covenant our lives to that child. I just don't see that at all.
In fact, I went to a Right to Life movie with a little group of very fertile people who wanted to talk about Right to Life. And I raised the issue of, of that very thing. And she said, we're a single issue group. And I said, what a single issue mean? Single issue politics, that's what they're into. They want to stop abortions. They don't care. I said, you are not Right to Life. You are anti-abortion. And that's all. And it was that very thing of that they weren't concerned. Or at least this one woman said that, that question was outside the concern of the Right to Life movement. And I said, well, having worked with a lot of poor women, I mean, the thing is, I mean, I begin to sense that abortion is a desperate act by oppressed people. And it's like the situation in Nicaragua where a lot of us said, we can't, in our position as First World Americans, we can't say, we can't make moral judgments for those people. And I guess I really sense that too. As a woman, it really, it's very hard to be a pacifist and be anti-abortion for me as a woman, because I feel like there's a choice that's made by two people and only one of them pays for it ultimately.
Well,
or in the most concrete way.
Yeah. Isn't it more complicated than that? I mean, that's bad enough.
Oh, it's extremely complicated, but I mean, that's where my emotion.
Yeah.
That's where the emotional stuff comes up for me.
But what complicates it is that someone has to also make a decision in light of the fact that the fetus cannot have a voice in the decision. I mean, someone has to speak for unborn life. And that even goes beyond the agony, or is a part of the agony, of the fact that you've got a woman.
Well, I think one of the things that's coming out even already is that the question about abortion shouldn't be made at the point of a woman being pregnant without a supportive community. I mean, that, even though that's where we have to make the decision, that is the Christian community, that should not be the point where we should be discussing
that's
it.
Right.
If it's gotten to that point, we have already sinned. The whole Christian community has sinned.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. If we get to the point of...
I'm just saying that as a moral decision, the question shouldn't be asked at the point of the woman being pregnant, having to ask whether or not I can bring this child into the world and care for it in the way I would want to. That's not the point to make the decision. The point should be made in cases where it's a pregnancy that's only unwanted. I mean, that it's not like a deformed fetus. The question should be, what is responsible sexuality? How do we say no so that our yeses have some meaning? How do we, or in the case of people who are married and who find that the child is going to be deformed, what kind of communities can we have so that we can still welcome those children into the world? I mean, don't make the decision after you have amniocentesis and find out the kid is not going to have a brain. I mean, that's not the place where I want to limit my moral decision making. I want to look at, like, I suppose what Howell was saying is, what kind of communities that we can make, can we have where we can... We can always welcome children, or where people can make that decision in a bigger context than this one child, this one mother, this one couple.
Yeah, exactly. And in terms of something we talked about, it seems like a long while ago now, part of ethics may be curative ethics. You have to deal with immediate crises and something that entails tragic choices. But part of ethics is preventive ethics. That is, you ought to shape the kind of community where some of these questions ought not be, have to be raised.
Well, I'm a little uncomfortable with Howard Watson, what's been said. I have four children quite close together in surgery following the last two, and the doctor said if I got pregnant again, it would be very, very serious, and I could have a rupture of fetus and not get pregnant again. So, from a subjective thing, I understand about abortion, but there was no way in my mind when the doctor told me that I didn't say to John, if I get pregnant again, I'm going to have an abortion. I have four little kids, and it's not that, you know, I could say, well, we had a great community of Christ in D.C., they would have taken care of my four children. I mean, when it's your person, when you personally are involved, I cannot help but change my idea about abortion when I was the one involved. I can look at everybody else, including a young friend who was raped in the inner city and had an abortion, and say, well, we would have taken care of a child who wasn't mixed race and if it was this or that or the other. But there's something about sitting here making objective statements and you yourself having to make a decision about an abortion. It's just a very different kind of moral decision.
Well, I mean, I certainly agree with the first part. I'm not so sure it's so different from some others.
Part of what you described, Mary, would be whether we give people making those choices, ultimately, whether they have options because they're living in a community. I mean, if you live in a community that, if you were raped and, I mean, to take a worst case scenario, and, you know, struggled with whether or not you could raise the child lovingly or whatever the dilemma was, if you had a community that was there to be in that process with you of parenting that child, that'd be different than being on your own and thinking, can I be the parent for this child? Not that that community tells the person what their decision ought to be, but if you offer choices. And the farm, which is a large community in Tennessee, sometimes the words, you know, the labels break down. I don't know whether to call them pro-life or whatever, but what they do is that they affirm life. So they put ads in the New York Times and in major cities that are written to women who are struggling with the abortion question. They say, if you want more choices than you feel you have where you're at, here are some. You can come to the farm and have your child here. You can leave the child here to be raised by us. You can stay here and raise the child here. You can leave and come back and decide to participate in the parenting of that child at any time. So instead of making moral decisions about other people's lives, they offer choices so that people don't feel so trapped with the situation that they're in. And to me, that feels, rather than grabbing a position on the abortion issue and saying, this is what I am, this is what I think people ought to do, if you can offer people choices.
Where is that community? What's it called?
Tennessee. It's in Tennessee. It's called The Farm. A friend of mine came to me and told me she was pregnant this last spring. She's young, fairly immature. She knew she wasn't ready to be a parent. And she pretty immediately, she was crying, you know, strong emotions, and she's trying to make decisions. And knowing she's not feeling emotionally steady enough to have to make these huge decisions in her life, but she's having to. And so she listed abortion as an option. She listed, you know, putting the child up for adoption, raising it herself, going home, letting her parents raise it, all of these things. Well, my gut said, don't have an abortion. You know, that's what I was, and she asked me point blank, what do you think about abortion? And I said, I'm not going to tell you. Said, I'm willing to hear and talk through all of your options with you. I'm willing to be part of other options. If you want me to hang around till you have this child or be part of the, whatever your choice is, I want you to know that you don't have to be alone in that, because she was feeling very alone in that. And she just started calming down, feeling like, you know, she had more choices than she'd imagined. So for me, that's where the ethical decision is going to affect me in the realm of trying to respond with more options for somebody, I guess.
You were saying to her then, too, that you would go and hold her hand if she had the abortion.
Boy, I would have had to struggle with that. I don't know. See, that it didn't go that far, but mm-hmm. I guess I was even open to that possibility, though my visceral mm-hmm. self would have really had tremendous trouble. I don't know what I would have done in that. But I just knew that it was totally unfair of me to immediately rule that out or to even, you know, sway someone. That just felt really wrong.
Yeah, it's so deeply personal that the subjectivity must be respected above all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's share some more points of view. Kirk, you told me before the session started that you weren't totally at ease with the last two lines of Simmons' chapter. He concludes the chapter by saying one is free to abort or not to abort as God leads. That is the freedom of grace.
I don't know for myself. Grace is supposed to be a freeing thing, yes, but at that point, it seems to me, it becomes an irresponsible thing. The example I gave to Larry was, okay, you know, I said grace was a good concept. You know, I'm glad for grace, and I need that. But there's also a point where you can use grace, I think, to justify your decision. And I kind of thought that that's how he was using it at that point.
Or to use a distinction one would have heard from in another context, from Bonhoeffer, the difference between cheap grace and costly grace.
Exactly.
I heard in your remarks that you thought Simmons might have been morally a little bit flipped. Or grace was too cheap. To say when it's free to abort or not to abort makes it sound like a decision on the same plateau. Although I don't say in fairness to him, I think the context is more that it is a terribly troubling and troubled and ambiguous matter. And in the midst of that ambiguity, what one must remember above all is that God's grace comes whether one decides to abort or not to abort.
Yeah.
And there is freedom in that. So I don't think that in the context it's his affirmation of what Bonhoeffer would call cheap grace. It's a way of saying that beyond morality, grace has a word.
I don't know. I'd like to hear what some other folks have written.
Yeah, Carla.
I hadn't read that, but just when you said that, the first thing still entered in my mind was what Marilyn just said, about how she was there to say, I'm your friend. You know, let's sit and talk. I don't, you know, I can't tell you what to do, but I'm your friend, whatever you want. That, I don't know, that just entered in my head.
And sort of transferring this to that sentence is a way of saying God's grace, or God is your friend. I mean, grace is that God is your friend, whether you're abort or not abort.
The grace part of it that's for me in that is, for me, having held the hand of people who have had abortions, it's like I can't be that person, I can't not be there for that friend that has made that decision to do that and not be supportive and not try to help that person through what he and she I'm going to go through afterwards. And I say that too because in my experience, it's been real hard for the men too, and I don't want us to downplay that part, even though the women's bodies are involved more so. I think it's really hard for men too.
Part of grace in that situation would be saying this, you know, we may all decide that this is a terrible sin, but that don't carry that as the ultimate act in your life. But there are opportunities for you to go on and to make changes and rectify whatever complicated situation got you to this point in the first place. That's why I think it'd be really important for Christian people who don't agree with that choice to still be there and say, you know, we welcome you back into the community. You know, let your experience teach us all about how we failed.
That just to say too that it does not end with the day of the abortion of a person.
No, and that's often forgotten. Much of the agony is after.
Years.
Yeah. Spent.
Again, for me, and bringing it to the level of the church, one of the things that both really angers me and really saddens me is that I haven't had the experience like Marilyn. Of a woman coming to me being pregnant beforehand, and in some ways I think that's fine because I think really women should talk more with women or the person they're involved with. But the times I've had women talk to me afterwards have really been in spite of the fact I was in the church. I mean, it took them a lot more courage to talk to me because I was in the church than if I had not been. And it just seems incredible. And the women I've talked to who have had other women talk to them, it's been similar kinds of thing. If that woman is involved in the church, chances are much less that a woman who's pregnant will go and talk to her about the dilemma than if she's not. And that... The mere fact that we're involved in the church, I think, oftentimes cuts us off from people even approaching us with their dilemma, because there's something about what the church represents that says dialogue is not possible, that compassion is not possible in your situation, will only give you judgment. And maybe I'm overstating it, but I have just found this time and again that, I mean, with my deepest pride, it's the same thing, you know, I have an engagement with it. But with my deepest problems, it just really makes me wonder why I usually will talk with non-Christians before I'll talk with Christians about it. I get my act together before I'm willing to talk to a Christian about it. And if I'm really struggling and questioning, I'll talk to someone who's not Christian. I think that on the abortion issue, I really see this, and it just, you know, how can we be the community we claim to be if that's what we were seeing?
Well, I see, again, very difficult, being placed in a very difficult position there, Spence. I hear you, but I do think the church has a dual responsibility, and in this case, the responsibilities clash. The most important thing to say is that God's grace is always there, and it's the last word. Whatever happens, whatever choices, whatever actions, that's the word that has to be proclaimed. That is the proclamation of the gospel. What complicates it is that church is also expected to be serious about the moral dimensions of any issues, and is very suspicious about simply leaving that up to individuals to decide. That moral issues are a community matter, that it isn't only a subjective matter of personal taste. I had one, the first ethics class I taught, I asked the students to write on a piece of paper what issues they wanted most to talk about. Well, this naive teacher got back live issues. I mean, abortion as a decision that had to be made this week.
What year was that?
In 1969.
It was before.
Yeah. She went to Canada. At the same time, when we followed that up, one of the persons said in a paper on abortion, we took that up among other issues, that she came down to the fact that she guessed that if the woman thought it was the taking of life, then it was. If she didn't think it was the taking of life, then it wasn't. Well, that's unacceptable to me too, not because I don't respect the subjectivity of the choice, but because moral norms and moral decisions are something beyond personal, individual choice, much less taste. So I think the church were caught between having to be very serious about the moral dimensions of an issue. In this case, it's a very serious one. And at the same time, having to say that grace transcends moral choices and is beyond them. And how to say those two things at the same time? It can only be embodied. You can't just say it. It can be embodied.
The only thing I can, I don't want to cut you off, David, but the only thing I can remember is what, because it struck me so deeply when you said this about divorce, that Jesus was the strictest on the application of divorce, of the law on divorce, that he just didn't condone it. But on the other hand, he was the most compassionate and the first one there when we, because of who we are, don't live up to God's call.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah. Mike?
When you said. You respect the subjectivity of that decision.
No one knows our world better than we do.
Yeah, but then he said you couldn't live with that or couldn't go along with that. So how'd you phrase that again? Because why? Because.
Oh, I said I at the same time that I want to respect the subjectivity of the choice, and in this case, the pregnant woman's choice. The moral decision cannot be left only to a matter of individual choice, and much less pain.
Is it set aside? It's not set aside totally from that, though.
No. No, I'm just saying why I think it's. Why I think it's
not
such
objective
a dumb,
that this is right and this is wrong, issue. Aside from society. I mean, so such as that Indians leaving or Eskimos leaving, old people die in the snow and stuff, and it's set by society's norms.
Well, this
is not wrong for them to do that.
This is exactly what we're moving into for Thursday. That is, who should decide and how? That is, where does moral authority and wisdom reside? For this issue or others. That question that you also wanted to take up about moral authority is precisely what we're moving into.
So I'm saying, but it's wrong because of what our norms are, or wrong because of what is actually being done. I'm saying.
I still didn't get it. Great.
Somebody else can explain it, or somebody else can understand.
I sense it's a very important distinction that you're drawing, but I don't have it right.
I think that's the question you're asking.
What is
truth?
No.
And who speaks it?
Yeah. I don't know. Related to abortion questions, per se, in small way, maybe it does, but in your acts, you can talk in very general terms of any act exposed, but is it our society considers wrong, or is it the Japanese consider wrong? Or Chinese or Russian. I'm sure there's basic things that are, but when you start talking about different things, on how do we decide what is wrong?
Are you saying, is there anything intrinsically
wrong? Relative to something or other. Relative to society, or is it morality relative to individual choice, or is it relative to certain groups, or is there something intrinsic?
We're talking to a Buddhist or a Hindu, they might have very different conceptions of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
If I have a sense of what's going on, Larry was saying he will not let it be, or the church dare not leave it as an individual subjective decision whether it's wrong or not. I mean, that's what he was saying.
Okay. But they don't exist. But the church doesn't exist as a community in the regard that we're talking about of what is necessary. I mean, that's McIntyre's contention, is that the real muddle of morality now is that in the past there was a community consensus, there was kind of a common understanding or common ground, whereas that is shattered in the modern world and that no longer exists. So we really can't even, the church isn't a community. It just isn't.
You're safer to say that about our setting than some others. But that is an important point, and that moves us over. Well, I'm not so sure that the church doesn't exist as a morally significant community for deliberating tough issues in every circumstance. In our society, I mean, I think McIntyre is right. He's talking about what has happened in liberal society. He says that we have a very hard time settling any morally substantive issue on any other grounds than procedural grounds, because we don't have a coherent moral tradition any longer to appeal to. We have such pluralism in our moralities that in order to live together and make these decisions, we have to go through not moral substance, but procedures. We have to say everyone can have his or her voice in this. We'll take a vote because we lack common moral traditions that all can agree to. Now, the one exception to that is probably Black nuns in the Supreme Court decision, where he finds a single moral ground that he thinks is satisfactory, namely the freedom of the individual, and says, what Americans will agree to is the right to private choice. That they will all agree to. And that's where he, that's the rest is procedural. That's the idea. And what Eric is saying is reporting sort of McIntyre's analysis of society, and also saying the church is not an answer to this lack of a community of coherent moral
substance. Well, I mean, I think that that is our, I mean, we keep on referring to the church as this community that, that somehow will be that support, or, you know, that answer. And I think that the point is that right now it isn't that community. I think that is a community.
Yeah. Carla?
It's not a community that takes responsibility. Seems like when you go through the procedural type stuff,
yeah,
your decisions, your moral decisions come out sounding like judgment rather than support or responsibility for saying, you know, this is what we think you should do, and we'll be there with you. Instead of, this is what you should do, have fun. You know?
Go in peace, be warmed
and
fed.
Yeah. I'd like to hear what Dave is doing, or what he wanted.
Well, no, we moved beyond that.
Go back to it.
Well,
pick it up.
Did you say that the personal issues were above and beyond, or were not, the moral norms were above and beyond what the personal issues might be, that we have to follow those? And I think that was kind of what Mike was addressing too. And that was my question. I just raised the question mark in his mind. But the personal choices are somehow have not as much significance as our moral norms.
No, I only wanted to say, the abortion issue, as with many others, but the special way here, is an intensely, deeply personal issue. I don't want to deny that for a moment. All I want to say is that from the standpoint of Christian faith, moral issues entail more than individual taste and purely private choices. It's a distinction between personal and private or individualistic. I want to say the personal is deeply involved and has to be honored above all, but it is not simply left to to an isolated individual making a decision on her or his own. The moral norms are more community, have more community character about them than that. And choices, moral choices, have more community character about them than that isolated individual choosing without any either help or constraint. The ideal out of the Enlightenment that has permeated our culture is the ideal of the autonomous individual choosing apart from tradition and apart from any constraints that are there because of other people. So our moral ideal has been, do those things which you want to do so long as it is not harmful to what other people choose to do. And there, as autonomous individuals. I respect the strong emphasis there on how important personal choice is. I think that Christian faith has lots of trouble with that picture of the autonomous individual choosing apart from any other factors. That's the only distinction I'm trying to make. Is that still muddled?
No, I understand that. I just don't know if I do.
Okay, well, that's what we're moving over to on Thursday, is precisely that question of moral authority. So I guess we'll just have to close again, quit without finishing. It's happened before.
We kind of talked about getting people's opinions. I think it's hard for anybody to make an opinion because it's hard to decide. But it would be really hard for me to see the law change.
It would be hard for you to see the law change?
Right now. I'm in agreement with what the Supreme Court said in 1973. And I think today I need a cheap grace, you know. I think maybe that's immature, but I think that's where I'm at. Huh.
I'm more in agreement with the law than I am the grounds for the law's decision. Mm-hmm. I find it deeply troubling that one had to make a decision essentially on procedural grounds, and that where the only morally substantive element is the right to privacy. That bothers me, because of what it says about society at large.
And points out once again that the Christian Church really needs to be there and to make other choices and develop other communities.
Because the law itself assumes no community and has people making decisions about abortion without any reference to the responsibilities of the society.
But isn't that fair to what's going on in most places?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I find troubling, is the commentary that the law represents about the state of affairs. I hope you didn't expect a resolution on this issue. I mean, one of my reasons for saying at the outset that I think abortion is one of the most intrinsically difficult, complex, and volatile issues